First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the opportunity to talk about our recent work. Before I start, I would like to acknowledge my collaborator, Snezhana Bogdanović, who is a former postdoc, and Janja Roshinsky, who is working with me at the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory in Tallahassee, and who is visiting from the Polish Academy of Sciences. We have obtained samples from two different sources. High mobility samples came from TUN Klapwijk at Delft, and low mobility samples came from IBM in Yorktown Heights. I would also like to acknowledge financial support by NSF and the Magnet Lab, and also useful discussions with Vladimir Dobrosavljevic. Two-dimensional systems in semiconductor heterostructures, and silicon in particular, have been studied in great detail continuously for almost 40 years. And many interesting phenomena have been observed, such as the quantum Hall effect and various mesoscopic effects. However, there are still many properties of 2D systems, especially at very low electron densities, that are not well understood. In particular, in recent years, there has been a lot of research activity concerning the issue of the metal insulator transition in two dimensions. In experiments by Sergei Kravchenko and his collaborators several years ago showed behavior that was indicative of a true metal insulator in transition in 2D, which was very surprising, because it had been believed for many years that there could be no true metallic state in 2D, and therefore no true metal insulator transition. So these experiments were followed by many other experiments by several experimental groups, and at least as many theoretical models have been proposed to explain the observed behavior. However, this issue is still very controversial. So in the first part of the talk, I will just briefly review the main experimental features and puzzles in this field. And as you will see, this transition occurs at relatively low carrier densities in the regime where both disorder and electron-electron interactions appear to be strong, which raises the possibility of glassy ordering. The main part of the talk will be about our own work. I will describe our resistance noise measurements, which were used to probe the dynamics of the 2D system, 2D electron system in silicon. And this work was really inspired greatly by work of Michael Weissman and his group, which was done on metallic spin glasses, such as the copper manganese. And as you will see, there are many similarities between our results and their results in that system. And you will see that from our results, it follows that this 2D metal insulator transition, at least in silicon, is related to the melting of the Coulomb glass. So as I said, the field, this renewed interest in this problem really started with experiments of Sergei Kravchenko and others. And this is, these are some data from their original 95 paper, where they measured resistivity as a function of temperature for many different electron densities. So at low electron densities, they observe an exponential increase of resistivity with decreasing temperature, which is what you expect in the insulating regime. At higher densities, they observe metallic behavior, that is a drop of resistivity with decreasing temperature. And this drop is fairly large. It can be an order of magnitude large, as you can see maybe more clearly here in the inset, which shows some more recent data. So there is an order of magnitude drop of resistivity, and this, in fact, is still not quite understood. So many people have focused on trying to understand the origin of this metallic behavior. Then there is a so-called separatrix, the density which separates these two types of behaviors. And this density, which is often identified with a critical density, is in these systems of the order of 10 to 11 per centimeter squared. And simple estimates show that for this range of densities, Coulomb interactions are about a factor of 10 larger than the kinetic or Fermi energy of the 2D system. So the interactions are strong. And also, the change in this temperature dependence occurs at relatively large resistivities of the order of h over e squared, which suggests that the disorder may be also playing an important role in this case. It's also interesting that these curves start to separate out into insulating and metallic at relatively high temperatures that are about a third of the Fermi energy. Well, they also showed what was an important contribution of this paper is that they showed that in this range of densities, all of these curves can be described by the same function as shown here. So these are the same data. They have been collapsed by rescaling the temperature. And this scaling parameter, T sub zero, is shown here in the inset on the log-log scale. They found that it decreases in a power law fashion as one approaches the critical density. And this is exactly the behavior that one expects in general in the vicinity of a quantum phase transition. You expect to have a characteristic energy scale which decreases continuously in the power law fashion as you approach the transition. So this was a behavior that was strongly indicative of a true metal insulator transition. However, the origin of this small energy scale is still controversial. Also, very early on, it was noticed that parallel magnetic field has a strong effect on these systems. And since this is a 2D system, the electrons move in a plane. When you put a field that is parallel to the plane, it does not affect the orbital motion, but it couples only to the spins. And it was noticed that parallel magnetic field increases the resistivity in this range of densities by an order of magnitude. We suggested that maybe spins were playing an important role. So this is shown here in the inset. Unfortunately, this plots conductivity. So it is hard to see that this is an order of magnitude drop of conductivity at relatively low fields, which is then followed by a much weaker dependence on the field. And it was also shown that magnetoconductivity curves in this range of densities can be also collapsed, which is what you expect in the vicinity of a transition. And this scaling parameter also decreases in a power law fashion as the critical density is approached. And this is shown here in this plot. It was also shown in other experiments that this scaling parameter is comparable in magnitude to the field which is required to fully polarize the electron system. And the results of one of these experiments is also shown here. So there is, again, the emergence not only of the small energy scale, but also of the small field scale in the vicinity of this transition. And this is yet another puzzle in this field. These were all the results that I have shown so far have been obtained on silicon. However, people have also studied 2D electron systems and also 2D electron hole, 2D hole systems in other semiconductors. However, all of these features look best in silicon. And by best, I mean that the metallic drop of resistivity is most pronounced, and also scaling seems to work best. And this is still not quite understood. Most of the experimental work has been on transport. There have been a few other experiments. What they have in common is that they all show some non-monotonic qualitative changes in the vicinity of that critical density. However, there is still no general agreement about the origin of this behavior. There is still no consensus whether this behavior describes, reflects the true metal insulator transition or whether it is simply some kind of crossover, finite temperature crossover. So, none of the experiments really shows a clear transition. As you will see, so we have used noise measurements. As you will see, noise not only provides complementary information, but also provides clear evidence for a transition at a very well-defined density in this system. Also, most of the experiments were concerned, and also most of the theoretical work has been concerned with trying to understand the origin of the metallic phase and the metallic behavior. However, it wasn't really clear what the nature of the insulator is. And this has been the focus of our work, trying to approach the transition from the insulating side, understand the nature of the insulator, and obtain some information, complementary information, in addition to what you can get from transport. Now, at low electron densities, potential energy dominates. And what we have in these systems are both, as I mentioned earlier, disorder and electron-electron interactions. Now, the random potential, the disorder, prefers a non-uniform electron distribution, whereas strong quantum repulsion would prefer to see a uniform distribution of electrons, which is the well-known Wigner crystal. So clearly, there is a competition between these two effects, and it is not possible to satisfy both of these requirements at the same time. So there is the system is frustrated, and as a result of which, the system no longer has a unique ground state, but rather there is an emergence of many metastable states with similar free energies. And in fact, this was shown about 30 years ago in numerical work, deeply in the insulating phase. It was shown that there is an emergence of exponentially many states in such a system. And these states are separated by barriers with different heights, which gives rise to the slow, glassy dynamics of these systems. At high electron densities, we do not expect clearly to have such a situation. So if this is true, this also raises the possibility of the phase transition in this system. So I will now describe our resistance noise measurements that we use to probe the dynamics of electrons in a 2D electron system in silicon, where the 2D layer is formed on the silicon side. This is a very rough schematic. On the silicon side of the silicon-silicon dioxide interface. And the electron density is controlled by the application of the so-called gate voltage. Now, in these systems at low density, the disorder is mostly due to the ions, which are mostly sodium ions, that are randomly distributed throughout the oxide. And those ions that are relatively close to the interface, they form this smooth random potential that is felt by the 2D electrons. And these ions are frozen out basically below 100 Kelvin, and our experiments will be all below 1 Kelvin, so that this disorder potential does not change with time. A rough measure of disorder is the so-called peak mobility at 4.2 Kelvin. And we used in our experiments two types of samples. They differ basically in everything, in the way they were fabricated. You do not need to remember all of these details, but they're sufficiently different that they span essentially the entire silicon technology. And the main difference between the two types of samples is in the amount of disorder. IBM samples had relatively low peak mobility, so they had a lot of disorder in them, whereas these samples with a relatively high peak mobility had a small amount of disorder. And actually, this group of samples is the same group of samples that has been used by a number of other experimental groups, including Sergei Kravchenko, Miriam Sarachik, and so on. So what we do in the experiment, we fix the carrier density at high temperature, relatively high temperature, say of the order of 1 Kelvin. And we cool the system down, and we measure conductivity by applying very small AC excitation, around 2 hertz. And we measure the conductivity as a function of time. And then we warm the system up, we record the conductivity as a function of time at different temperatures. And then when we want to change the carrier density, we again go up to about 1 Kelvin and change the carrier density at high temperature. So it is a measurement, again, of the conductivity as a function of time. And this shows some of the raw data obtained on very low mobility, that is, highly disordered samples. These are the relative fluctuations of conductivity, relative with respect to the time averaged value. These different traces describe the data obtained for different carrier densities, and they are shifted arbitrarily, vertically for clarity. So this is the lowest density and higher densities, and all of these traces are at relatively low temperature. So you can see that at the lowest densities, these fluctuations are huge. They are of the order of 100%. Also, as we increase the density, this noise decreases in magnitude, and the same thing happens when you increase the temperature. Noise becomes smaller. It is also obvious here that this noise is non-Gaussian. You can see even that the distribution function is not Gaussian. And in fact, the character of the noise changes dramatically as the carrier densities vary. For example, these low densities, you can see that the variance changes with time. For example, if you measure noise here, we would think that the noise was relatively small. But if you repeat the measurement here, then we would see that it is much bigger. And also know that this is a scale of about 15 hours. There are fluctuations on all kinds of time scales. There are some very slow processes which take several hours in addition to much more rapid fluctuations. As we go up in density, the character of the noise changes. And this is maybe more clearly seen on the next view graph, where we show the raw data obtained now on high mobility samples with relatively low amount of disorder. These are the fluctuations of resistivity, and here we divided by the square root of variance so that all of these appear to be of roughly the same magnitude. So we can focus on the shape of the noise. And you can see at the lowest densities, which is here, again, the variance changes with time, whereas at high densities, it always looks the same. No matter when you do the measurement, it always looks the same. And I will come back to this point later in the talk. So, in order to understand what is going on here, first we have to have some rough idea of what kind of regime of conduction we are in. So in order to understand that, first we look at the time average conductivities or resistivities. And the results are shown here for high mobility samples, where we plot the time average resistivity as a function of temperature for different electron densities. And again, these are the same samples that have been studied in great detail by other experimental groups. And not surprisingly, we obtained basically the same result. So at lowest densities, we observe insulating behavior. At high densities, we see metallic drop of resistivity. And then there is a density which separates these two types of behaviors. In other experiments, for example, Kravchenko and others, they have also fitted insulating curves to an activated form. And they have, from these fields, they have extracted the activation energies. And the activation energies were then extrapolated to zero to obtain the critical density. So in other words, in this way, you obtain the density where this strong localization, exponential localization ends. And in these samples, it more or less coincides with this so-called separatrix to within a few percent. So in low mobility samples, we have done the same thing, the same procedure. And however, these low mobility samples had never been studied earlier. The results are shown here. Now, just know that now we're plotting conductivity, so it's the inverse of what we had before. Conductivity as a function of temperature for different densities. Now, let me just remind you that each point here represents the average over several hours of data taking, and we are also not showing all the data. Now, in general, these results have a lot of similarities to those obtained on high mobility samples, samples with low amount of disorder. At high densities, the conductivity increases as temperature goes down, which means we have metallic behavior. Then you have this temperature-independent curve, which occurs at roughly the same kind of conductivity, about 1/2 E squared over H, as in high mobility samples. And then, as I will show you, there are two other densities that appear to be special. There is the critical density, where the metal insulator transition takes place. And unlike high mobility samples, it does not coincide with the separatrix, but rather it takes place at a density that is about more than a factor of two smaller than this density. And the glass transition takes place here on the metallic side of the metal insulator transition, which means that you have a metallic phase, a metallic glass phase, and an insulating glass.
Can you explain what you call it, a glass transition?
Well, you cannot say from here. Okay, you'll find out from the rest of the talk. From the transport, you cannot say this. At this point, I just want to show where these effects will take place. And so first, I'll show you how we determine this critical density. Basically, we did it the same way that was done in high mobility samples. We look at the insulating curves, the lowest density curves, and feed them to an activated form, which is shown here in this upper view graph. So this is an Arrhenius plot. We extract activation energies, and they're shown here. We extrapolate them to zero. And we end up with a density, critical density, that's more than a factor of two smaller than this separatrix. So of course, this was very surprising because it was very different from high mobility samples. So we wanted to look at the temperature dependence around this and see the critical density in more detail. And this is shown here on this lower graph. So this was an empirical fit. This was the best we could do with this data. The best fit that we found was a metallic power law behavior. Metallic because this goes to a small finite value at zero temperature, and then there is this temperature-dependent correction that goes as T to 3/2. So this is all that you can learn from transport. So now we want to study noise, and the first thing we looked at is just the amplitude of the fluctuations, which is shown here in the inset. So this is just the amplitude, the square root of variance, as a function of density. At different temperatures, and in this range of temperatures, it doesn't seem to depend on temperature. There is clearly a strong dependence on density. However, what is most striking about this is that there is this dramatic change of slope. There is a huge change of slope here, which occurs exactly at this n sub c, with the density that was identified with the critical density for the metal insulator transition. And we do not understand this in detail, but perhaps it makes sense in a kind of hand waving kind of way, because if the electrons become localized, they cannot move as much or as easily as at higher densities. The main plot shows the noise, the relative fluctuations of conductivity. And at high densities, again, we do not see any dependence on density. And here I show the position, the location of that separatrix. There does not seem to be anything special going on there within the scatter of data. However, the critical density is here. However, now there is another density where noise suddenly increases exponentially with decreasing density. And this effect is more pronounced as you decrease the temperature. So this is exactly actually what we saw from the raw data. But here we see clearly that this takes place at some density which does not seem to depend on temperature in this range. And that takes place on the metallic side of this transition. So next.
Do you determine this NG from this plot here?
No, this is not all. I mean, the whole talk is about NG. So this was our first indication that there was something special happening here. There is another density where something takes place. So after this, we looked at the noise power spectra. We looked at the Fourier transform square. So some of the examples of noise power spectra in these low mobility samples are shown here. So this is the normalized noise as a function of frequency for several densities at this lowest temperature. And in all cases, we find that noise is of 1 over F type, 1 over F to some exponent alpha. These are very low frequencies between 10 to minus 4 hertz up to less than 10 to minus 1. These are very long times. And as you can see, there is a lot of dependence here on carrier density. So if you, for example, fix the frequency at some value, you see that the magnitude of noise changes dramatically, which is shown on this main plot here. So again, at high densities, there is no density dependence. And then here, around this NG, the noise increases by 6 orders of magnitude, the low frequency noise. This is a log scale. So it means that here, the system suddenly and dramatically slows down. And the inset shows the temperature dependence of noise, which is, again, what we saw from the raw data, that noise increases as you decrease the temperature. And it seems to depend on temperature in an exponential way. So now, in addition to the change in magnitude, there also seems to be some change in slope. So the next few graph will show you how this slope, which is this exponent alpha, depends on the carrier density. And so what we see here in the main graph is that at high densities, the exponent alpha is 1. So you just have 1 over F noise. And then there is a sharp jump to a much higher value of about 1.8. And this jump occurs at that value exactly, NG. So not only does the magnitude of low frequency noise increase dramatically, but also the whole spectral weight shifts towards low frequencies, which again indicates that the system suddenly and dramatically slows down, which we attribute to glassy freezing in this system. The inset shows the temperature dependence of this exponent alpha for a couple of densities in this glassy phase, so a couple of densities here. As you can see, as you increase the density, about 0.3 Kelvin, the exponent alpha decreases to 1, and at about 1 Kelvin, you can no longer see this jump. It's 1 over F everywhere. However, there does not seem to be any sharp change as a function of temperature. It seems to be gradual. So all these effects are observable only at low enough temperatures. And I also would like to mention that similar large values of alpha have been also observed in some spin glasses. There have been a couple of such reports. Now, in the high mobility samples, we observe the same thing.
Metallic spin glasses, I mean, same.
Excuse me?
That's metallic spin glasses in the.
In metallic spin glasses, they have observed the.
The alpha defined the same.
Yes,
way.
Yeah, the same way. Yeah, resistance noise, yes. Yeah. In high mobility samples, we see similar results. Again, these are some examples of the resistance fluctuations for different densities and the corresponding power spectra. Here, the power spectra actually multiplied by F, so 1 over F would be horizontal on this scale. So you can see in all cases, the noise is of 1 over F type, with exponent alpha being between 1 and 2. So now if you plot all of this for all different densities that we have and so on, this is what we get. Here is an example of the noise power at 1 millihertz as a function of density. Again, the same as in low mobility samples, we do not see density dependence at high densities. And then there is a dramatic exponential increase of noise, low frequency noise, at some density. And this is also accompanied by a jump of alpha from 1 over F to an exponent roughly about 1.8. And this shows that the temperature depends, again, that the noise increases as temperature goes down. So both types of samples exhibit similar behavior. There is a relatively well-defined density where where the dynamics suddenly and dramatically slows down. The main difference here is now that in these high mobility samples, this onset of glassy dynamics takes place very close to this critical density for the metal insulator transition. These two densities almost coincide within the error of our measurement. So this is the main difference, whereas in these very low mobility, highly disordered samples, we had this relatively wide metallic glass phase. Here, this metallic glass phase appears to have shrunk. Now, in analogy with work on metallic spin glasses, we have also looked at higher order statistics, at fourth order statistics. In particular, we look at the so-called second spectra, where the second spectrum is the power spectrum of the fluctuations of the first spectrum at some frequency f with time. In other words, if you do your measurement today, calculate the power spectrum, you obtain some value at a given frequency, if you repeat this measurement, if the fluctuators are not correlated, you will always end up with the same value, so that the noise will be, second spectrum will be white. However, if there are correlations between fluctuators, the spectrum of this function will be non-white. So this is a very powerful probe because it's a very powerful tool because it probes correlations between fluctuators. And this is also, so we have repeated, we have done the same work in analogy with this work on metallic spin glasses. And here are the results. This is an example of the second spectrum obtained on high mobility samples at a frequency of 1 millihertz. These are results for density slightly above this NG, and this is slightly below NG. We have repeated this for all different densities and both types of samples, and the exponent 1 minus beta, which describes the second spectrum, which actually tells you about correlations in the system, is shown here. Okay, so in high mobility samples, samples with low amount of disorder, at high densities, this exponent 1 minus beta is 0, which means that in this range of densities, the noise that you see is 1 over f, and it comes from uncorrelated fluctuators. And then, exactly at that density ng, which in these samples almost coincides with nc, noise becomes correlated suddenly. And the same thing takes place in highly disordered samples. Again, at high densities, we observe 1 over f noise coming from uncorrelated fluctuators. And exactly at that same NG, where we saw the jump in the exponent alpha of the first spectrum and the slowing down, we see that the statistics also changes. This exponent becomes non-zero, which means that the fluctuators become correlated suddenly. And here I have also the example of results obtained on spin glasses. This is the result of Mike Weissman on copper manganese when they observed this strong second spectrum. There was also another study of second spectrum in spin glass, cadmium manganese telluride. These samples were just slightly above the metal insulator transition. And in this case, apparently due to the absence of long-range RKKY interaction, the second spectrum was white. So our results are actually very similar to this work on metallic spin glasses where they have long-range interactions. So the results of the second spectrum are consistent with the study of the first spectrum, and it shows that suddenly at this value ng, the system slows down and the dynamics, the statistics changes completely and becomes correlated. The only difference, again, is that in high mobility samples, all these densities seem to coincide. The glass onset of glassy dynamics seems to take place at the metal insulator transition, whereas in low mobility samples, there seems to be a relatively wide metallic glass phase. In metallic spin glasses, they have also used the second spectrum to try to distinguish between different models of spin glasses, namely between droplet models and hierarchical picture. And we have done the same thing. Basically, what I showed you was the second spectrum calculated frequency of 1 millihertz. You can do this, calculate the second spectrum at other frequencies. And in hierarchical pictures, where we have this, which is scale invariant, where we have this self-similar tree of different metastable states, we do not expect to see any dependence of the second spectrum, which measures correlations on the frequency. Whereas in the droplet models, due to the different sizes of droplets, you would expect to see a dependence of the second spectrum on the frequency. So similar to these spin glasses, metallic spin glasses, we do not see any systematic dependence of the second spectrum on frequency, which tells us that our results are consistent with the hierarchical picture of glassy dynamics. Again, very similar to the results on metallic spin glasses. So in addition to the, so mostly we have studied noise spectra, and we have not studied other effects like aging in detail. However, we have also, I will just show you an example of the history dependence and slow relaxation in this system, which are also characteristics of glassy dynamics. So basically what we did is we followed two cooling protocols. In one procedure, we changed the electron density from very high to relatively low in the glassy phase at high temperature, and then cool the system down. And in the other protocol, we first cool the system down, and then we change the carrier density. And so the procedure is shown here. We measure conductivity, and we start from high density, this red point. We change the density, and we end up here at this point, too. And we stop, and the system actually relaxes, which is shown here in the inset. It takes about 80 hours for conductivity to reach some stationary value, which is shown also here. Then we cool it down, we obtain this value of conductivity, and we go back up to the same original value. In the other procedure, we cool it down, we get this blue point, and then we change the density at low temperature. We reach the desired density, the same as before, and we let the system relax. And if it relaxes, and after about 90 hours, it seems to reach some stationary value, which is shown here. However, even though the temperatures and densities are the same as before, the conductivity that we end up with differs by a factor of 2 in these two procedures. So this is additional evidence of glassy behavior of these systems. So what we have learned so far is that this glassy freezing of 2D electrons occurs in all silicon inversion layers in the vicinity of the metal insulator transition. And it is manifested in two ways, by a very sudden and dramatic slowing down of the electron dynamics, and also by an abrupt change to the sort of statistics that is characteristic of complicated multi-state systems in agreement with this hierarchical picture. Also, we observed that the width of the metallic glass phase depends on the disorder. So all of this presents the evidence that this 2D metal insulated transition is related to the melting of this electron glass. However, there is still this question whether this glassy freezing perhaps is due to some kind of spin interaction, which in fact has been suggested by some people, or whether it is due to the charge degrees of freedom. And fortunately, these systems, this is easy to answer because this is a 2D system, and if we put a parallel magnetic field on, it couples only to the spin. And other people's experiments have shown that in these systems at relatively low fields for this range of densities, fields about 2 or 4, between 2 and 4 Tesla, the 2D system can be fully spin polarized. So in that case, if we work at even higher fields, if we observe the glass transition, that means that it cannot be due to the spin degrees of freedom, but rather to charge. And this is exactly what we have done. We have done a series of measurements in parallel magnetic fields. And here are, again, are some examples. This is an example for a fixed carrier density that was in high mobility sample. This was a density on the metallic side. It was above the critical density for the metal insulator transition. And this was our 1 over F uncorrelated noise. Now, when you put a field on, a relatively small field, the noise is actually suppressed, becomes smaller. But if you increase the field slightly, the noise increases, and in fact, it also changes its character, which means that it becomes, you have this second non-white second spectrum, you have correlations. And these are the corresponding power spectra. You can see that the exponent is also changing. And it's also interesting here that actually the noise is suppressed, even though actually the resistance of the sample increases with this parallel field. So we have done this for many different fields and many different densities, and the results are, some of the results are shown here, where we are plotting noise power, or the magnitude of noise at 1 millihertz. Then we are looking at the exponent alpha, the exponent of the first of the power spectrum, and also exponent 1 minus beta, which is the exponent of the second spectrum, which is the measure of correlations. So at high densities, and this is always a function of the magnetic field for different electron densities. So at high densities, the noise is suppressed, and at fields above 4 Tesla, it does not depend on the field anymore. Now, if you reduce the density, for example, if you look at these purple triangles, these actually correspond to the data, raw data that I just showed you on the previous U graph. The noise is first suppressed, which is what we saw, and then it increases, and then it saturates. Now, this increase of the noise is also accompanied by a rise in the exponent alpha, and also by an increase in this exponent 1 minus beta, which measures correlations. And these were all characteristics of the glass transition in zero field. So we can say that for this density, this field corresponds to the field where the glass transition takes place. So even though it was metallic and non-glassy in zero field, at this field it goes into the glassy phase. Now, for all densities, none of these quantities depend on the magnetic field, which is consistent with the fact that the 2D system is fully spin polarized in this range of fields, which was shown by other people's experiments. However, for example, if you sit at a relatively high field, high density data will fall on top of each other. There will be no density dependence. However, as you reduce the density, there will be, again, a jump in noise. And this can be identified as the density, again, where the glass transition takes place. So in other words, we can take these values that we obtained in this way using the same criteria that we used in zero field, and we can map out a phase diagram. So this is a phase diagram. Here we have a density as a function of the field. The green squares represent the results that we obtained for the glass transition. So as you can see, the NG, the glass transition density, increases, and then it saturates at fields, again, above about 4 tesla, where the system is fully spin polarized. So the density that I showed you earlier, for which we saw the raw data, was about here. So it was in the metallic phase at zero field. When we put some field on, the noise was suppressed. It was still in the metallic phase. However, as soon as we hit this field here, the noise increased and became correlated, and so we entered the glassy phase. So we can see that this glass transition persists even in these high parallel fields where the 2D system is spin polarized, which tells us that it is this glassy ordering is due to the charge as opposed to spin degrees of freedom. Also, it was interesting to compare this value, the glass transition density, with a critical density for the metal insulator transition. And in our sample, this critical density is represented by these red points here. They were mostly obtained by looking at the insulating curves, by extrapolating activation energies, which is the same procedure that was used in zero field. So you see that at zero field, these two densities within the error were almost the same. However, as you increase the field, this metallic glass phase actually broadens, becomes wider. The blue triangles are results that were obtained by Shashkin and Kravchenko. On another sample from the same wafer, they obtained these results by also by looking at the activation energies on the insulating side. And as you can see, these results agree very well. So we see that this metallic glass phase, again, even though it was really not visible at zero field in these high mobility samples, in the presence of the magnetic field, becomes broader. And for example, we can look at the temperature dependence here in this metallic glass phase. We can fix the field, for example, at 2 tesla and look at the temperature dependence of conductivity. And what we find is actually interesting, because this is the conductivity, again, as a function of temperature for different densities. It's actually temperature to 3/2. So again, in this metallic glass phase, we find metallic behavior where the temperature dependent correction goes as 3/2, which is exactly what we found in low mobility samples at zero field. Except that here it looks even better because the temperature range is wider and we have more densities. So this temperature dependence can be extrapolated to zero, and we can look at the zero temperature conductivity, see how it decreases as you approach the critical density. And this is shown on this view graph on the log-log scale. So this is the zero temperature conductivity as a function of the distance from the critical density. And this shows you that it decreases in a power law fashion towards zero with an exponent of about 1.5. Again, this is this kind of behavior is exactly what you expect in the vicinity of a true quantum phase transition. So if we go back to the previous slide with this phase diagram, actually these three red points here for 1, 2, 3 tesla were obtained by looking at the temperature dependence from the metallic side, whereas the blue triangles were obtained by coming from the insulating side. As you can see, the agreement is pretty good, and the agreement between these two densities, these densities obtained in two different ways, is further evidence that this is really a true metal insulator transition in the presence of a field. So basically, these are all the results. I was probably going too fast. The question is whether this, whether it can be described, whether there is a theoretical picture that can describe this. And fortunately, in the group of Vladimir Dobrosavljevic, also at the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory, they have been working on a model of a metal insulator transition as a Mott-Anderson transition. And this is the global phase diagram, where on the axis we have Fermi energy and this other in units of the cooling interaction. So what the model actually predicts is the emergence of this glassy behavior as a precursor to the metal insulator transition, which is exactly what we see in the experiment. And in the experiment where we vary the carrier density, our experimental trajectory would correspond to these green lines here. So as you can see, for the relatively low disorder, which is the case in our high mobility samples, this metallic glass phase would be very narrow or almost non-existent. Whereas in low mobility samples, where we have more disorder, the metallic glass phase would be broader. And this is exactly in agreement with our experimental results. Also,
this spinless electron, is that spinless rayon?
No, no, this was actually for the 100 model.
But would it matter?
Well, actually, this feature of the metallic glass would not matter.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the metallic glass is there independent of.
Right, but what I think matters is how, when you reduce the sodium, you put the mod insulator, okay. The spin will matter.
Sure. Yeah.
So the shrinking of the metallic phase would be that.
Okay. Yeah.
So the existence of this phase and the dependence on the disorder are in agreement with our experimental results. Also, the temperature dependence in this metallic glass phase is in agreement with our results. And the model also will predict hierarchical correlated dynamics, which is what we see in the experiment. And it also describes other effects that have been observed in other experiments. So basically, we have observed the glassy ordering of the 2D electron system in silicon, which occurs as a precursor to the metal insulator transition. And we have established that it is due to the charge degrees of freedom as opposed to spin degrees of freedom. Now, the question is whether a similar behavior may be observed maybe in other systems. And very, very recently, within the last few months, there have been two other studies. One is a study of 1RF noise in a 2D Hall system in gallium arsenide, which also observed an increase of noise with decreasing density and decreasing temperature. However, they have not observed a jump in exponent alpha. And in fact, they did not. And one reason for this may be because they did not go to low enough carrier densities. So this is still an open question whether the results will be similar to silicon or different. However, I would like to point out that in these systems, there is much less disorder than in silicon. So perhaps they would correspond to a situation like this, so that you may not even expect to observe this glassy behavior. And another extremely exciting paper for me, at least, was the study of 1RF noise in bulk 3D phosphorus doped silicon, which is a system that has been studied for last several decades in the context of a 3D metal insulator transition. And in spite of all that work, there are still many issues that remain unresolved. And these people have actually observed a huge increase of noise, and in addition, the onset of non-Gaussianity exactly or in the vicinity of the metal insulator transition in this bulk system. So this is extremely exciting because it shows that maybe these phenomena are more general. However, there is clearly much more work to be done. So thank you very much for your attention.
Do they see a metallic glass? Well,
no, no, it is.
Size, right?
Yeah, within a few percent. Yeah, yeah.
What's the difference between your good samples and Kravchenko's?
My good samples.
Your good samples, the resistance.
They're the same.
It looks like it already dropped by factor 2 or 3.
Well, these are more recent samples. I mean, the samples that show a factor of 10. These are all Pudelov samples.
There's only one.
And Klapwig samples are maybe a factor of 5 or 6. So they're the same. We can actually overlap our data with their data. So
does one know what's the difference? I mean, I realize that's not what you were focused on.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the samples that show a factor of 10 drop and those that show a factor of 2 or 3? It's not clear. What
well, they do have a higher mobility.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't know exactly why, how they got such a high mobility, but yeah, they do have much higher mobility. Yeah. So they have like 40,000, and these are 25, the best. Yeah. Yes, we did. Yes, we did. But actually, we are not able to go very deep into the insulating phase because it becomes very impossible to measure. The conductivity becomes very small. So that in the range that we have, actually activated seem to be better, but the range is relatively small. There is not a big change in resistivity. So that even if you do fit to a variable range hopping, it's really hard to tell what the exponent is. I mean, it's hard to tell the difference because there is maybe an order of magnitude
that
change in resistivity.
Gap between two critical densities, one for what you call metal insulator transition,
and NG?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very, very different.
But you're saying if you use a barrel range...
No. Oh, it would be the same. It would be the same thing. Yeah, you would get the same thing. So, yeah, it would not make a difference.
Could you please compare to the results of deep over there?
Well, they have mostly studied aging.
Yes.
And
the range of parameters are the same?
Well, that's a 3D system. It doesn't seem that interactions are that important in their system, as far as I understand. I think it's mostly disorder. Whereas here we have both of these effects. But, I mean, that's all basically. I mean, they haven't studied noise much, we haven't studied aging, but I think in their case, the disorder seems to be more important.
These are metallic fields with a huge Fermi energy. Here we have a very small Fermi energy.
Okay. Yeah, but. Okay, thanks.